The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is strongly advised. Welcome to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne live, dial 905-725-1907. Toll free in North America, 1-866-905-7325. Email Joanne, realityradio101@yahoo.com. And now, the lady with several green thumbs, Joanne Shaw.
Well, hello, and welcome to Down the Garden Path. Thank you on this nice and cold Monday night, last Monday of January. Thank you for listening to the show, and I hope you enjoyed last week's show. I just like to recap. So if you missed it, I talked with Amanda from Element Ecological, and we chatted about many things, but especially about native plants. And I think it went really well. I had some really good feedback from my Facebook page and from friends and family that were listening. But I realized myself after the show how much more I wanted to learn about native plants. So I've done some research, and I'm still looking for another plant expert to bring on the show, native plant expert, for an upcoming show soon. So stay tuned. I think we can all benefit from some low-maintenance plants that are good for the environment and benefit birds, butterflies, bees in our gardens. So I hope you enjoy the trip to learn more with me. Anything I can add that will benefit future landscape designs, and I think that's a good thing.
It is a good thing, and thank you very much for our plant in the control room.
Yes.
Of Reality Radio 101.
We have officially.
You brought me, and it's a beautiful vase too. Do you say vase or vase? What is it?
Well, it's a pot.
That's a pot. Okay.
It's a blue pot. It's a ceramic
pot. But it looks
pot.
Nice. It's
it
gorgeous.
Does.
Thank you
yes,
for that.
Yes, I didn't want to just bring
you
it
didn't
to you
have
in,
to
the
do
in
that.
The plastic pot. But
you didn't have to do that.
Well,
it's beautiful.
It'll be nice to have some greenery. And,
yeah.
And I'm here weekly, so I can keep an eye on it.
Yeah, okay. I gotta load this place up.
Yeah.
Because we need the fresh air and the oxygen.
For sure.
And
so
else.
Any benefit that we can bring. So
thank you for that.
You're welcome.
It was very
you're
sweet
welcome.
Of you to do that.
Yeah, that show we did a couple weeks ago on air filtering plants.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up putting in my monthly newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
It was so much information, I actually had to break it into two newsletters. So
wow.
Half the plants went in January's newsletter. The rest will be in February's newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
But also got some really great feedback. And,
that's great.
You know, people continue to say, oh, but what about this plant and what about that plant? And I really stressed how much I pick the plants for also their ease of taking care of.
You so are about the non-maintenance.
That's right. That's right. So that's what we want to try to do on the show is talk about down-to-earth practical advice for making your garden and plants and landscape design and all of those things easy as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And low maintenance.
Very good. Well, I know you're going to have a special guest on tonight.
I am.
And I'm going to try to reach him on the phone
okay.
now, and we'll go from
yeah,
there.
Yeah, sure.
Thank
so
you.
I am. We're going to talk trees today. that is one of the biggest topics that I get. And even for myself, I don't think there's all my years of doing landscape design as well as working in nurseries, there's always a huge amount of questions regarding trees. So Richard from Skyline Trees agreed to be a guest tonight, and we are going to talk all things trees. So I hope you're looking forward to it. Please, if you have questions for us or something you want to ask me or Richard, please give us send us an email at realityradio101@yahoo.com. Or you can email me directly at joanne@downtoearth.ca, the number two. And we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to have the feedback. So I think we've got Richard on the line now. Welcome, Richard.
Hi, Joanne.
Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I look forward to it. As I was telling everybody, trees are such a huge topic. In all my years of schooling and landscape design and working at nurseries, I feel like I could never know everything. So I'm looking forward to discussing trees with you tonight.
I'm in the same boat. It's a changing and challenging science. Each year brings new and varied concerns and challenges and problems.
Yes.
From the ice storm to the emerald ash borer, you know, you don't know what's going to get you next.
Yeah, that's right. Why don't we start off with you telling us a little bit about your background and how long you've been in business?
Okay. I'm a graduate from the Niagara Parks Commission School of Horticulture. I graduated there in 89. It's a very small school of horticulture.
Yeah.
So that happened back in the 80s, and I worked from that point. Worked, you know, for a couple of different companies, a couple of different municipalities, trying to figure out exactly what I wanted to do with my horticulture diploma, and all the while was involved in tree care. We, as students, you know, to make money while we were going to school, we did work in the Niagara region, and so. Arboriculture was sort of my love during that period, and
okay.
I gravitated back to that once I went to the West Coast and worked for a couple of private companies out there.
Oh, that must have been a nice opportunity to go out there.
It was terrifying. you know, having been out there a couple of times before that, you know, recognizing the difference in the size of the trees
yes.
from Ontario to British Columbia is massive. So that was a great place to cut my teeth, as it were, in the industry, and came back here back in 92 and worked again, and then started my business in 93. So Skyline Tree Service has been, you know, operating since 93. Tough starting a business, but
yeah.
Very happy to to have done that. It's been, you know, quite
right,
successful since.
Yeah,
and,
the right move for you.
It's an enjoyable, you know, way for me to carry on my career. realized that I wanted to do something for myself, and I've met lots of great people and had some terrific employees, and so it's been enjoyable. And, you know, get to do the things that you want to do, sort of the way you want to do them.
That's right, and when you want to do them, it's nice. That definitely has its perks, being your own boss.
Oh yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, you know, the upside and downside. If you mess up, it's your fault.
That's right.
Can't blame it on the boss.
That's right. And I think the Niagara Parks School of Horticulture has grown a bit as well, I think, since you went. I'm actually from the Niagara region originally. I'm from Welland. So
okay.
So I think of all the, you know, I came all the way out here. And then when I went to go back to school, I ended up going to Ryerson to do my landscape design certificate. But I thought it was funny that so much from where I grew up that's really the heart of a lot of plant growing and education.
Oh yeah,
in
you know,
Ontario.
You don't know you don't know where you are until you've left and looked back.
Yes,
it was a terrific place to learn. You know, there are 12 students a year that go to that school. I think it has an affiliation at this point with Niagara College, but you know, you specialize in the different aspects of horticulture and don't really step outside of that. So arboriculture, the study of trees, is part of the science of horticulture. And so about probably in the range of about 10% of the students go into arboriculture from that.
Really?
You know, they graduate greenhouse growers, people who run park systems for municipalities, landscapers, and tree guys as well.
Wow, that's great. But 10% is still not as much.
You have to be a different sort to want to climb trees for a living.
Yeah, I guess it is all about the climbing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Initially, anyway.
Well, basically a lot of it is just a lot like what everybody else does, but sometimes it's at 40 or 50 or 60 feet off the ground.
Wow.
So you still have to do the same types of things that you do when you're pruning a 4 foot tall burning bush, in an 80 foot high oak tree.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the very basic principles are the same. So.
Right. And now, do you have multiple crews, or do you?
We tend to run basically just two crews.
Okay.
Sometimes it's just one crew, depending on the size of the job. We'll take everybody out for one job. I've stayed small, had opportunities to get bigger, but I didn't get into this line of work to do purely management. Although at some point I may have to.
Yes.
Nearing 50 years old, I'm not able to climb the same way and for the same length of time as I was when I was 30, or as I did when I was 30. It does have a lifespan, but I never thought I would still enjoy what I'm doing as much as I do this long into it either. I always assumed that I would be in the office, by the time I was this ripe old age.
Right. Well, that's great that you still enjoy it, though.
Exactly. And it's what I tell my own children and tell, guys that are working for me and girls that are working for me. If you don't like it, do something else.
Mm-hmm.
It was the best lesson I ever learned through education and everything else. I can be very good at what I like.
Yeah. Well, but I think that goes for our industry as a whole. It is hard work. I mean, every aspect of it, from landscapers to arborists to, so if they don't love it, then I don't think they stick around. I think it really shows because it really is with the weather, the conditions, the unpredictability of the seasons year to year, it can be a tough job. And
we've all heard the same thing over and over again from the office worker talking to us when it's 26 degrees and partly sunny, partly cloudy, and almost windless.
Yeah.
What a fantastic job that is. they aren't around when it's minus 10 and sort of snowing and blowing, and they're all inside going, glad I'm not out there.
That's right. Or those 100% humidity days where we're, you can't even move, never let alone climb a tree. I can't even imagine in those hot days. So,
as you say, you have to love what you're doing, because there's some days you don't even like it. So.
That's true. So maybe you can give a bit of a background as far as an arborist versus, I think people kind of lump everybody together in the tree trimming and those tree removal guys versus someone like you who's had the education to back it up and that you've studied arboriculture. How do you differentiate it?
It's like anything that anybody does, broadly speaking, aside from some very, very specific things. You can be a jack of all trades, and as the cliche goes, end up the master of none. There's a guy with a truck and a ladder and a saw. He's got a shovel. He's got a rake. He plants flowers. He takes down trees. He builds retaining walls. Probably none of them that well.
Mm-hmm.
Some highly skilled individuals may be able to get away with doing that, but you can't generally speaking specialize in everything, just by the nature of the word. So as my education went, I started out with horticulture and I learned about plants, and then I specialized in arboriculture. So I was able to take the science and put it into the practical use. As a tree climber, as the saying goes in our industry, nobody knows if you did a good job at 60 feet. if that cut was made to the branch bark ridge, did you flush cut? Did you, make a proper pruning cut? You have to know, and you have to care.
Mm-hmm.
So it's anybody can do a, or most anybody can do a, you know, a small removal. They may not do it well. They may not do it efficiently. They may not, you know, they may not take as much care with people's, you know, private property as far as turf and driveways and all the other obstacles that, you know, gravity may put the tree into contact with.
Right.
So, you know, there are a couple of different aspects. You can, if the trouble with trying to find the right guy that isn't an arborist to take your tree down is that, you know, you may find a guy that can do it well enough, but if you end up having him try to her try to prune your trees, can they do that well enough?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're, as soon as you choose the person to do the job, I guess you have to decide at that point whether you want a pro to do it or,
right.
You know, as I say to my guys, when you're working, if you make a mistake, it's terrible. If the person wanted to have it done badly, they could have done it themselves.
Yeah.
Or hire anybody that hasn't done it before. So, you know, our crews and a lot of the decent tree care companies, they take pride in what they're doing. So, you know, minimal damage, you know, to turf and flower beds and shrub beds and everything that is underneath you. You know, I've had customers say, you know, well, we expected to have a little bit of damage. Well, you know, if you expected to have a little bit of damage, you should have done it yourself.
You could have had
a little bit, or you could have even had a lot.
Yeah.
But when we do it, you know, as much as accidents do happen, they should be, you know, very few and very far between.
Yeah. I think because they've probably seen a tree come down by somebody else, you know, across the street or their parents or at their friend's house and seen damage. So then they assume that, you know, that's going to be the case.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Everybody's been in contact at some point or another with, you know, a tree removal.
That's
you know,
right.
Whether it went well or well, whether it didn't go well.
Yeah, that's right.
There seems to sometimes be some shock and some surprise on where things go.
All right. Well, let's hold that thought there for a moment. Richard, we're going to take a break, a commercial break here on Reality Radio 101. Thank you for listening.
Put the special into your special event. With our finger on the pulse of today's event scene, we provide for all your entertainment needs. Amuse and amaze with look-alike performers, illusionists, and interactive entertainment. Fill the air with jazz, dance music, classic rock, Latin, and disco. Thrill your guests with tarot and psychic readings. And treat the kids with children's entertainers, face painting, inflatables, and more. When your reputation is on the stage, let our reputation for excellence earn you a standing ovation. For more information, visit aratoevents.com.
Long before you've pulled the sheets up, rested back onto a soft pillow, and drawn a curtain on the day, your body will have silently defended itself against countless threats. Viruses, bacteria, poisons, diseases, all are elegantly swept away as part of the usual routine. When life flows in harmony, the human body has a miraculous ability to heal itself. But what if you have a sense that this is not happening for you? Or maybe you feel that somehow your body is out of balance. Where are you at in terms of your health and wellness? Perhaps you have been diagnosed with a particular condition and you would like to explore alternative health possibilities for a synchronized holistic plan. What can you do? Take charge of your health and wellness by having a homeopathy consultation with a knowledgeable and experienced homeopathic practitioner. At his Durham Region and Toronto clinics, Dr. Joe Kellerstein can work in collaboration with you to arrive at positive strategies to help you feel more in control of your health and wellness. Contact Dr. Joe Kellerstein for an appointment at either 905-433-8666 or 416-484-1673. Check out his many informative health-related articles at www.drjoend.com. That's www.drjoend.com.
The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is strongly advised. Welcome back to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To send Joanne an email right now, email her, realityradio101@yahoo.com. And now, back to your host of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you, and welcome back. We're here tonight with Richard from Skyline Trees. And thank you for what you were saying, Richard. I think that was a great analogy about hiring a professional and the difference between... I also want to talk about insurance-wise, because I get that a lot, you know, when I'm a landscape designer and I work just doing designs, and then I work with contractors. Yeah. And I find the right contractor that will work with my customer. And the few customers that come back and say, oh, that's a lot of money, or do I really want a contractor? And I say, you know, there's always going to be somebody with a truck and a shovel who could do it cheaper. But it doesn't mean that they're, you know, they've got the insurance, that they know what they're doing, that they're going to be here next year if something goes wrong to back up their work. So I would think with an arborist, you probably have the insurance...
Oh yeah, there are aspects of it that, you know, everybody has to deal with the same questions, and nobody wants, very few people want things to cost as much as they cost.
Right.
For whatever reason, some people will feel better buying some sorts of things for more money than, you know, for example, cars. You don't know if you're necessarily getting something more out of it, but people feel better having the perception of spent more and got something more.
That's right. There's a ticket item, or there's something kind of about an expensive car, right?
Oh, I'm always standing beside the $120,000 vehicle when somebody says that's expensive, about what I just said, that, you know, the tree costs were going to be.
Yeah.
Pruning the tree in the front yard over top of the very expensive automobile, apparently the $1,500 was expensive, but the $120,000 wasn't.
Right.
It's hard not to sort of chuckle a little bit.
Yeah.
But I always say that you can always get something for cheaper. It's just a matter of if it's the same thing.
Right.
So as soon as you have your friend or that guy in the truck with the saw do the work, and something goes wrong, it's sort of on you.
Yeah.
You can chase them. You can hope that they're insured, but you know, in the event that something terrible happens, you really want to make sure that the person has, you know, WSIB, for example, to cover their employees' liability insurance, automobile insurance. You know, we pay tens of thousands of dollars a year to do those things, to have those things, so that if something did go terribly wrong, it wouldn't be on the customer.
Right.
It would be on us.
Yeah, I think of some of the, you know, situations where you see trees, you know, moved from the backyard between homes, you know, having a tree fall on, not even your own home, then what if the tree falls on your neighbor's home or in your neighbor's pool, you know? I'm sure you've seen the horror stories.
Oh, yeah. You know, with the magical internet, it doesn't take very much to YouTube, you know, tree removal gone wrong.
Okay.
And, you know, nobody wants to make those videos. Nobody wants to be on those videos, but they certainly happen. And that's, you know, the other thing that I suggest, because, you know, I expect people will get, you know, competitive quotes when we look at work and when I look at work. So I will recommend that they do that. One of the recommendations is that you get a competitive quote from a reputable company.
Right.
You know, don't work your way through the yellow pages, as it were, starting at A, and get the quotes there.
Yeah.
The other thing to do is to always make sure that you get referrals.
Mm-hmm.
If the landscaper or the tree guy or the plumber or the kitchen person has made one of your friends happy, there's a much better chance that they're going to make you happy.
Yes, yeah. For anything that we do, absolutely. I think word of mouth is huge.
It also gives you a baseline for what something like what your friend just got costs, opposed to being completely surprised and shocked and saying, that's a lot of money. Well, you know, sometimes you get the feeling that if you said $300, it was going to be a lot of money.
Yes.
If you said $3,000, it was going to be a lot of money.
Yes.
It's a gut knee-jerk sort of reaction.
Yeah.
But
that's the same for landscape design. No matter how much I charge, right, it's still a lot for a piece of paper. But it's, you know, I can't explain to people the education and the knowledge that went behind that piece of paper, you know.
Yeah.
So,
And it's easier for me if I know that somebody's come in through a referral, it's much easier for me because I know that my work already got there before I did.
Right.
They've already had the conversation. Somebody's already been selling for me.
Yeah.
You know, by saying, well, we had this other tree company and we were very dissatisfied, you know, to take out some of the expletives that I hear. you know, you want to deal with contractors that, you know, make you happy. It is your hard earned money. You want to make sure you're spending it where you want to be and you want to be happy when it's done.
Yeah. Now, what situations or why or in what situations should homeowners call an arborist? It's not just if a tree needs to be removed or if the tree is getting too big, right?
No, it's not. It basically, everybody's property is so very different. We work from small yards in newer subdivisions where somebody's planted, for example, you know, new shade trees, and will be called because somebody doesn't know about the spots in the leaves. Somebody doesn't know about you know why the tree is struggling.
Right.
Everybody has a tree that's similar age in their backyard, and mine isn't doing as well.
Right.
You know, what can I do to help it?
Mm-hmm.
We go from that to going into old established neighborhoods in, you know, the older cities where, you know, somebody has a 60 or 70 foot tall tree growing 5 or 6 feet away from the house with literally tons of wood up over the house.
Mm-hmm.
And they're concerned about whether that tree is, you know, for example, safe, or is there something we should do to make it safer? Some people just don't like to have trees over their house.
Right.
They're scared.
Yes.
You know, they see the big storm go through and they figure it was only good luck that spared them the last time, so we better get rid of that. And unfortunately, the ice storm had people doing that left, right, and center. I spent most of April and May trying to convince people not to cut their trees down.
Really?
Because
that's good to know, though, that you're not just going to jump when they say jump.
I like to think that's part of the, you know, getting the arborist rather than just the guy that cuts trees down.
Yes.
And, you know, you can bet your butt that there were more than a few of those that popped up because of the excess workload.
Oh, for sure.
Know, in the winter. And, you know, as the saying goes, if your only tool is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And if all you can do is cut it down, you know, what can you sell the person?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll look at it and say, well, you know, very often I'm the worst salesman in the world. You don't need to do anything. You know, the tree looks fine.
Yes.
It's not dangerous unless there's something specific that you can tell me that you want done, which is just a purely aesthetic thing. Very often there isn't anything that needs to be done.
Okay.
You know, and that's what the homeowner and the potential customer should hear. They should hear that, you know, there's no reason to spend money on this.
So do you think it created panic? So people saw the tree, the particular trees that were damaged in the ice storm, and maybe their tree wasn't damaged, but then they felt like, okay, I got through that one okay, but the next one's going to get me, so I better remove my tree?
That's exactly what it did.
Oh, okay.
And I used that as sort of a talking point, because when the next door neighbor's tree that looked just like theirs was shredded, you know, I look at it, and then their point of view is, how lucky I got.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe how lucky I got. It's like, well, you should realize now is that what you got was a better tree.
Yes.
You've got a tree that actually went through all the same stresses that the neighbor's tree that looked the same went through. And very often, you know, in hindsight, I can tell somebody, you know, if I'd been there before, where the flaws were that failed. In an ice storm, you know, things fail that you can't see under the surface. But more often than not, you see, you know, included bark and split crotches and things like that that an arborist should be able to point out in the first place. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we prune those branches out. Sometimes we cable to support those limbs. But a lot of, you know, except for in an absolutely extraordinary circumstance like the ice storm, a lot of that damage, that windstorm damage and things like that, is preventable.
Okay. So if the tree was looked after, you know, so how old do you start pruning? I mean, because right away when you first plant, you know, a 40-millimeter tree, it probably needs to grow for a few years.
Yeah, in olden days, in the, you know, the science of arboriculture is a relatively new one because the generation of the plants you're studying is so long. It's not like studying corn where you know get a whole new crop the next year. Trees, we were way behind because it takes so long for them to show us what, you know, what they need and what's wrong with them. So they used to think that when you planted the tree, because you cut off such an extraordinary amount of their roots, you had to cut off a bunch of the top.
Okay.
They did that for years. And if you look through older scientific texts as well as, you know, how-to gardening manuals, they'll say that. They realize, you know, after the fact, and the teaching now is that there's a hormonal difference between the amount of top growth compared to the amount of bottom growth or root growth. So when you throw that askew by cutting off a lot of the roots, you can, that disproportionate relationship will cause the tree to put more root growth out.
Oh, okay.
If you at the same time cut off a lot of the top, you throw that back into, you know, sort of balance, and the tree says, okay, well, I'm fine.
Oh, I see.
So that's, you know, but unfortunately those things took a long, long time for them to figure out, you know, as recently as probably the mid-80s, they were still teaching that.
Really? That's really interesting. But I think I can remember that. I think I can remember, you know, grandparents or older people saying that you need to trim. Yeah.
Well, and you, on top of that, try to teach the people, or try to tell the people who've been doing it in the industry for 20 years that what they've been doing is wrong.
Yeah.
And the same sort of thing happened with tree wound dressings, the big trade name back in the old days was Bracco, and it was basically an asphalt-based tree paint.
Yes.
Everybody at some point or another who's probably older than 30 has seen black paint dressing.
Yeah. Or tar, like it was like a tar, right?
Yeah, it's basically just roofing tar.
Oh, jeez.
And tree guys used to climb around with buckets of this stuff on their belt. So you picture, it's a hard job to begin with. They had brushes that they had sort of set up to attach to their pole saws, so that you could cut a branch off, you know, 8 or 10 feet away, and then put the brush on the pole saw, and then paint the wound that you just made.
Oh, yes.
So tell the guy that's been doing that for 20 years that it wasn't that you were actually doing harm, more harm than good.
Yeah, and that it was one of my questions for you later, but that is one of the, I mean, even just as a landscape designer, I'm not a tree expert, but I will always, couple times a year, if not more, get an email saying, what do I do? Do I paint the wood, paint the wound? I put paste on it? You know, I have neighbors that are doing it and I'm trying to talk them out of doing it, that type of thing. So,
well, it was, you know, over the years, the way the science has progressed, everybody just cut the branch off and you left a stub.
Yes.
And then they realized that that wasn't the right thing to do. So realizing that wasn't the right thing to do, they made the cut as flush as they could. Then they realized that those wounds were healing poorly. So they started trying to figure out the perfect place to make the cuts. And, a scientist that passed away, you know, I think three years ago or so, called Alex Shigo, basically invented you know, his book was called A New Tree Biology, and it's a terrific one to look up. He figured out how to make a pruning cut by years and years and years of dissecting wood that had pruning cuts made on it.
Right.
and then seeing which ones decayed and which ones didn't, which ones decayed where, and learned all about that.
Yeah.
And then that, you know, was finally filtered down to the industry so that the ones that we're studying in there, that sort of goes back to your question about being an arborist or not being an arborist.
Right.
That's something that every arborist should know.
Yeah, because not all cuts are created equal. It's not, I mean, that's something a homeowner should know, right? It's not just about making a cut.
No,
you need
not
to do
all.
The cut properly so that the tree will, the goal is for the tree to heal itself.
Right. You know, it's a very, not to get too in depth in it because it, you know, only have a certain amount of time.
That's
know,
right. That's
you,
right.
People start to glaze over, but, you know, trees can't heal. So, It's a misnomer.
Oh, is it?
But
okay.
But we use the term because we have to understand them from a perspective that we understand us.
Okay.
So as much as they bleed in the spring, they heal when you cut them. That we have to think that way or else we don't understand it. But all the tree can really do is put up protective layers in its biology to keep the decay from getting back into it.
Okay,
so
that's kind of healing. Like, I see what you mean. So as far as humans go, that's healing.
Well, for us, we send, you know, white blood cells in. They fight the battle. They kill this. They kill that. The tree basically just sort of makes a scab, as it were.
Yeah.
Inside, outside, above and below the point of wound, and then keeps the decay from being able to go to other places because it's a structure.
Yes.
You know, you're trying to, the biggest issue when you get decay is if that limb or that trunk is supporting something.
Yeah.
And then it breaks off and then you end up with, you know, catastrophic failure.
That's right.
So.
Now, importance of pruning. So, of course, for large trees, and I don't know if you, the age of a tree. So are you saying like 5 years old, 10 years old? Is there?
Oh, sorry. I do have a tendency to go off. I didn't write down what you'd said.
Okay, sorry.
One of the most valuable prunings, or if not the most valuable pruning you can do once you get the tree, is depending on the species and how well it's growing, likely to be in the first 5 to 6 years.
Okay.
You know, if it's established well,
yes.
Depending on how old it was when you got it,
yeah.
You know, and that type of thing. Because what you're trying to do is weed out the, you know, the weaknesses of the tree.
Right.
So you look for repeating stems, you look for, you know, secondary tops, competing tops. If the tree is supposed to have one leader,
right.
You take another leader off,
right.
So that you subordinate it and keep it, you know, thinking of that 15-foot tall tree,
right.
And trying to extrapolate, you know, a 60-foot
yes.
tall tree out of it.
Exactly. Although I have to admit, I try to not... Well, I guess some of the trees I put in designs now will get that big. But with the yards being smaller, I find I'm looking at more 15, 20-foot trees. So,
well, and good for you, because it's one of the tree guys' biggest complaints.
As that's
much
right.
As much as it pays us, we don't necessarily like to have to cut them down just
that's
because
right.
the wrong tree was in the right spot.
All right.
Or
well,
in the wrong spot.
I've got some more questions for you on proper pruning of ornamentals. So, but we're just going to take another commercial break. So... Thank you for listening to Down the Garden Path, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Reality Radio 101.
Each day you age a little bit more. What can you do about it? Take charge of your life. Get active in your health decisions. Sharon Fillmore, noted author and consultant, invites you to find out more about ASEA. ASEA is the first and only source of highly patented redox signaling reactive molecules outside the body. It contains the raw materials that our body and our immune system need to help support our overall health and well-being. ASEA has been shown to significantly increase the efficiency of communication signals between cells, those involved in cell damage detection, cell repair, and cell replacement. We are also pleased to introduce Renew 28 Anti-Aging Gel. Dermatest, one of the leading dermatological research institutes in the world, gave Renew 28 its coveted 5-star clinically tested seal. Contact Sharon Fillmore to find out more about ASEA and the new anti-aging topical gel, Renew 28. Find her on Facebook at The Exploding Health, Wealth, and Nutrition Business, or contact her directly at www.businessofhealthandwealth.com/free and download a free copy of her upcoming book, The Exploding Health, Wealth, and Nutrition Business. Remember, you can't get well if you don't heal the cell.
Welcome back to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. And now back to your host, Joanne.
Thank you, Gary.
That song is from A Tree, If You're Feeling Ugly.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that.
Yeah. Now, you know, and I know, I don't know if you guys touched upon this yet with Richard, but a lot of people say that the best time to prune trees and all that is late winter. Is that true?
So it depends on the species. They're still trying to figure some of that out. Dormant tends to be the best time to prune a lot of trees. For example, in the orchards, you want to prune them specifically before the insect pests and disease pests are really active. So you'll see them pruning especially the apples will be pruned while they're dormant in the winter. The more tender fruit trees will be pruned closer to when they break dormancy and go into the growing season, because they desiccate and the wounds dry out more. One of the great myths that you'll hear on many gardening shows, and I say this having spoken with scientists asking over and over again the same questions: can you prune a maple or a birch tree when it's bleeding? Which is in the spring. The best possible time to prune trees is the nearest you can get to their fastest growing season, because they're going to compartmentalize, they're going to heal, as it were, those wounds the best.
Really?
When they're growing quickly.
Okay, so that's like when the sap is running, that is okay?
It is okay. The only problem that I've having, as I say, you know, going to school, hearing these people, I've had customers come rushing out of their house and say, I didn't want my birch tree pruned now. You can't prune it now, you'll kill it.
Okay.
Well, the tree doesn't work on a pump system.
Yes.
So you can, this is the way it was again described to me and explained to me by a scientist. You can wait until the leaves come onto that branch and you can cut the branch off. Or you can cut the branch off and the amount of sap that would have gone out to populate that branch with leaves is going to run out of the wound.
Okay.
So you haven't lost anything that you weren't going to lose into the leaves.
Okay. That's a good way to look at it, actually, for our listeners. That's a really good visual.
Yeah. You know, if you thought of it as having had a pump system, then there would be a bigger issue.
Mm-hmm.
But we could bleed out if we couldn't, you know, close those wounds. But the tree can't. So the biggest issue that was explained to me, sometimes you get these disease pathogens that will cause a fungus on the sap as it's running down the bark. So you'll get what's called a sooty fungus. So sometimes you'll see a darkish, blackish fungus that will grow on the bark, and it'll die as soon as the sugar's gone. So it's the same fungus that you'll get on linden trees, for example, when you have the aphids on them.
Okay.
So when a linden tree gets, you know, it is infested by aphids, they break through the epidermal layer of the leaves, and they excrete a sugar. And so that sugar is a perfect place for this fungus to grow. You'll get the same thing on houseplants with different aphids and woolly aphids and sap-sucking insects.
Now, does that sugar fall? And because I know people report that they're underneath
their
linden
cars.
Trees, it gets very messy, right? Their furniture and
Yeah, the car gets sticky. And if you don't wash your car often enough, and you see this with people who, you know, say have a car that is you know unplated and sitting in their driveway, it'll actually turn black too.
Oh, okay.
So that will explain to you how dangerous that fungus is.
Mm-hmm.
If it can grow in your car, it's not going to do much damage to the tree. It only wants the sugar.
Right.
So,
okay.
But that's, you know, it's a tangent from the question, I understand. But pruning in the spring is great. Pruning in the summer is fine. You adjust how much you take off.
Okay.
You know, you don't want to do a massive hedge reduction, for example, in the hottest time of August.
Right. Right.
Because, you know, you're going to expose unexposed bark.
Yeah.
Trees will burn the same way we do.
Yeah.
Where they've been shaded. And then the other main time that you would consider not pruning is later in the summer when, pardon me, you do a harder prune that could encourage all sorts of growth that won't harden off for winter.
Right. Okay.
So again, if you it doesn't mean you can't prune.
Yeah.
You just have to tailor how much you're taking off.
And that's especially with evergreens as well, right? To
yes.
do a lot of pruning of evergreens in the late summer, early fall is not good because it hasn't had a chance to heal before the winter. I know that's something. And pruning, so we're talking about pruning large trees, but also there's an importance of pruning ornamental trees. Like I think of, I go visit a lot of homes that have, you know, 15-year-old Japanese maples, or the other one is blue spruce standards that haven't been pruned. And so they're starting to lose their globe, right?
Right.
Those...
With those ones, you know, we end up doing a fair bit of shrub pruning as well. Like I was saying early on in the show, you use a lot of the same principles pruning that burning bush or pruning that giant oak tree. If you're going to shear something, it's a different story. But some of those blue spruce standards, you know, sometimes the look you're going for is more of a, you know, almost an architectural unpruned look,
right,
as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And that you need to stay on top of,
right,
because they shade themselves out. And now you can't prune it back to the size you need it to
right.
be. But if you keep the light into the inside of it, you can keep that going.
Right. And it's the leader, because sometimes it starts to show, that leader comes back, right? And you kind of start to get, you see that where it's a globe, it started out as a globe, but then you start to see that pyramid kind of come back
mm-hmm.
again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you've got to watch for those things. And again, if you get it right away, notice it and prune it, then you don't have to go too long with it looking like it's been pruned.
Right.
But if you know, often when we're called in and somebody sold a house.
Yes.
And, you know, they had other concerns when they were selling it, then the next people move in, they had other concerns after they bought it, and now can we look at our garden? It's like, well, I wish I was here 6 or 7 years ago, because
mm-hmm.
That bad haircut you don't like.
Yeah.
Now I've got to do it to some of the shrubs if you want to keep them.
But they bounce back pretty quick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
worth it. It's worth doing. I know it seems a little harsh. I know that's happened. I've seen Japanese maples where the homeowners thought they were full and lush, but I could see, you know, the cross branches and you know, the potential for damage. You know, it's like you said, a good haircut is a good thing, really, in the long run.
And recognizing, you know, as we were talking about, the times when you don't want to, you know, the more tender a plant is, the more you want to err towards pruning in the spring,
right?
Where, you know, where you're going to get lots of regrowth. And
okay.
a Japanese maple compared to, again, either a burning bush or a catalpa or something like that just cannot be pruned. Like the Japanese maple cannot be pruned the same way.
Okay.
If you go after it and start taking 3 and 4 inch diameter branches out of it, it's not going to do well.
Yeah. So I would say that's definitely a situation where you want to hire a professional, because, I mean, the Japanese maples are expensive when I first plant them. And as they age, they definitely increase in value, because, you know, you can buy a little teeny tiny, you know, Charlie Brown tree for, you know, $100, or you can buy one for $500. So when it's been in the ground for 10 years, I mean, it really does increase in value. And that's something you just don't want to risk.
No.
Correct. You really want to have a professional. And that's something, it's worth your while to go come out. Because I think some people think, oh, it's just a Japanese maple. Nobody's going to come to trim that.
It's tricky. We're set up generally speaking, if we've got a three-person crew, we roll with, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars worth of equipment.
Yes.
Plus three people getting paid.
Yes.
So it's very hard to do the very tiny jobs.
Yes.
But it's also quite unusual for somebody to have one tree.
Yes, true.
So it's a matter of looking around, and that's what I'll ask, rather than just telling somebody, you know, what our minimum charge is, because that may scare them.
Yes.
You know, spending this much money
for one tree.
To do one tree.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like, do you have anything in the backyard? Do you have anything, you know, on the side yard? Is the neighbor's tree overhanging your house?
Yes.
It doesn't keep you from having to spend more money, obviously, but you may be able to make better use of the time and the money that, you know, that you're thinking about spending.
Well, that's good to hear, for sure. So we're lots to talk about, Richard. So I wanted to just quickly ask just a couple questions because we're running out of time. But
sure.
Again, I want to just my customers. These are some of my top questions that I get asked. So trees planted too close to the house, do they really affect the foundation?
I have only seen a couple of times in my career where a tree has affected a foundation. If you picture when a tree gets big enough to heave a sidewalk,
yes,
that is pushing concrete up into the air.
Right.
So it's not that hard to do. To try to push concrete that is fixed in place is quite hard to do.
Okay.
In a very heavy clay soil, having a very large growing tree planted, you know, 3 or 4 feet away from the foundation, eventually, certainly it could fracture the foundation.
Okay.
But it doesn't happen it doesn't usually happen from 10 to 15 feet away.
Okay. How about my next popular one is trees that you recommend near pools? Because I have that where people have a yard and they want privacy and they want to put a tree.
You know what? I've been asked the question so many times, and I can find a flaw in just about every tree.
And
I don't own a pool.
Okay.
So everybody that has a pool tends to dislike trees near it.
Yes.
Even if they don't drop small leaves, they'll drop, you know, flowers.
Yes.
And
yeah.
everything else. So it's a love-hate situation. If you want to have a tree near someplace near the pool.
Yes, because they want privacy.
Yeah, you have to at that point decide that you're going to do a bit more work.
Yeah.
Every tree that you put near a pool is going to cause more work.
Yes. Now, I often do that. I go with the pyramidal oaks.
It's a very good choice.
Yes. Okay. Phew.
The thing is, the pyramidal oaks will most often hold their leaves until after the season's finished.
That's right. At least until the pool's closed, right? And
mm-hmm.
and then they come off before the pool is opened.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that is a good choice.
Okay. And they're nice and narrow and tall, so that they make good privacy trees.
Mm-hmm.
And, all right. And what would your favorite tree be? What do you like to see more of?
For the longest time, I've loved oak trees.
Oh, okay.
I believe they have, you know, terrific form. They're majestic trees. I was a fan of the red oak over everything else for many years. I like the white oaks as much, probably just about as much at this point. They're just terrific, terrific long-lived trees.
Excellent. And is there a tree that we should stop? One last question. Gary's saying I have one last question. What tree are we, even as a landscape designer, you can be honest, or in general, what tree should we stop using that's being overplanted?
The Norway-type maples.
Yes, the Norway maples.
Which are Crimson Kings.
Oh, even the red ones, the Crimson Kings?
Yeah, they're all the same.
Okay.
They're Acer platinoides.
In
dormant, I haven't been told how you can tell them apart dormant.
Okay.
They're just clones of cultivated varieties of the same thing.
Okay, well, I'll have to talk to you about that because I have two Crimson Kings on the other side of my fence, about 8 feet away from my pool. Previous owners put them in. So
once they're there, there's no reason to get rid of them.
Oh, no? Okay.
No, but don't plant a whole lot more.
No, for sure. For sure. Well, thank you very much for our chat, Richard. Thank you very much for coming. And we covered a lot, and I think it was really informative. So I hope
Thanks.
All the listeners enjoyed learning all about trees as much as I did. So thank
My
you
pleasure,
again.
Dear.
And that's we're all out of time. So Gary's wanting us to wrap it up.
Thanks, so I'll talk. Thanks, Gary.
You're so welcome. Thanks, Rich, for being on the show.
Yes, thank you.
Very happy to.
Take
All
care.
Right. So thank you for listening to Down the Garden Path. I'm Joanne Shaw, and you've been listening to Reality Radio 101, and we'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. Coming up, it's Kickstands Up with Lou Devano, right here, Reality Radio 101.